So I was at a bar once, a couple of drinks in, when someone asked me what I thought the meaning of life was. Casual Tuesday night conversation, right up there with how's work and seeing any fresh human rights violations on your feed lately. And I said, I think we're all just pushing boulders up hills that we know are just going to roll back down. And they chuckled, ordered another round, and changed the subject to something a little less depressing, like their breakup and the resulting restraining order or whatever. But yeah, I was trying to be a little funny, but I was also making a metaphor about how our lives are basically relatable to Sisyphus. Because most of us are familiar with the Greek myth of Sisyphus, the guy who managed to piss off the gods so badly that they sentenced him to push a boulder up a hill over and over again, forever. And every time he almost reaches the top, it rolls back down. Repeat for eternity. Sisyphus is basically the patron saint of the human condition, which of course includes people stuck in jobs they hate, dead-end relationships, or they're struggling with various chronic environmental, political, or physical, not to mention mental health issues. And then Albert Camus comes along and he says, well, we should try to imagine Sisyphus as happy. Now, at first I thought, that's the dumbest thing I ever heard, and I've been on Twitter. To me, it smelled of toxic positivity, like telling someone with depression to just cheer up. Basically, it's the philosophical equivalent of a live, laugh, love poster. But it stuck with me because I think we are all Sisyphus to some degree. Every day we're pushing our boulders against forces that are slowly and inexorably wearing us down. And unfortunately, entropy is undefeated as of yet. Everything we build is temporary. Everything we fix breaks again. Everyone we love will leave or die, including us. So, this is where you might ask yourself, what's the point? I mean, most of life is spent waiting for our so-called real life to begin. After high school, after college, after we get the job or the career, the relationship, the marriage, the kids, after the next crisis. There's always a once between you and the life you think you're supposed to be living. It just goes on and on. And the boulder never stays at the top, does it? So you get the degree and the job market collapses. You get the job and it's nothing like you imagined. Turns out corporate culture means mandatory fun and surprise layoffs. You get the relationship, and it turns out that person has their own boulder that they're pushing, and sometimes their boulder crashes into yours, causing all sorts of mayhem. And the finish line just keeps moving. Or worse, you cross the finish line and you realize there was nothing ever there. So it's been shown that even lottery winners eventually return to their previous level of happiness. Because apparently humans are remarkably good at staying exactly as miserable as before. And we tie our self-worth to external outcomes that we don't have any control over. We hand the keys to our happiness to the universe, and then we get mad when it drives drunk. So this is the trap. We resist the present moment because we're convinced that the next moment will be better. And we resist our current situation because we're sure that the next situation will finally be the right one. Sisyphus probably thought this way too at first. Maybe this time the boulder will stay up. But I'd be willing to wager that after the 1,000th failure, that optimism becomes impossible to maintain. So there's this experiment that haunts me, where scientists put dogs in a box with an electric floor, where they'd shock the dogs, and of course they'd try to escape. And eventually, an escape route was made available. But here's the thing. The dogs didn't leave because by that point, they'd learned that nothing they did mattered. So they just lay there getting shocked. This is called learned helplessness. And it's one of the more disturbing things humans have done in the name of science, right up there with the good old Stanford prison experiment and that time that we invented Facebook. But we do this sort of thing to ourselves all the time without anyone even forcing us into a box. If you try and you fail enough times, you're going to stop trying, right? And it's not because you're weak. It's because you're just learning from the experience. The problem is that the lesson becomes nothing I do matters. Helplessness becomes like a comfort zone. It's predictable. It lets us off the hook. And you generalize your failures into an identity of sorts. Sometimes I see this in myself. I'll avoid something because I'm convinced that I already know how it's going to end. So I'll self-sabotage because unconsciously I'm trying to prove to myself that I was right to be helpless. At least if I'm the one who ruins it, I maintain some sense of control over the disaster, right? It's kind of like being the captain of the Titanic, but you're also the iceberg. We would rather be right about our helplessness than risk being wrong. All right, here's another way to look at it. The brain is basically a prediction machine, and prediction requires patterns. So if the pattern is things don't work out, your brain is just trying to protect you from future disappointment by making you not try. Understandable. But the alternative is terrifying because it means accepting that you don't actually know what will happen. It's accepting uncertainty. It's accepting that you might actually have some control, which means you're also, therefore, responsible. So, helplessness in a convoluted way is a comfort zone. It lets you off the hook. So, I used to think my problem was that I dwelled too much on the past. I'd replay conversations, obsess over mistakes, torture myself with all the what ifs. But then I realized that's not dwelling in the past. It's refusing to accept that it happened. When you're laying awake at 3 a.m. rewriting history in your head, you're not really accepting the past. You're resisting it. And you're living in an alternate timeline that doesn't exist, trying to somehow retroactively prevent something that already occurred. It's like time travel without the time machine, which is to say, it's not actually time travel, it's just suffering. And the same thing happens when we avoid the present by drowning it in distractions and you know, scrolling until your eyes burn. Drinking until you can't remember why you started. Binge watching shows you don't even care about because the alternative is silence, and silence is terrifying, and your thoughts are horrible company. Both tactics, the rumination and the avoidance, are really about the same thing. Refusing to sit with what is. Refusing to accept that you can't change what happened and you can't control what will happen. And we think we're in control when we resist. We think if we just think about it hard enough, wish hard enough, distract ourselves effectively enough, we can somehow avoid the reality of our situation. But resistance doesn't really give you control. It just surrenders it. Because when you're busy fighting what already happened or avoiding what's happening right now, you're not actually doing anything about what comes next. So your attention is stuck in the past or, you know, scattered across meaningless distractions, which means you're not actually present for your own life. Okay. When therapists or philosophers talk about acceptance, it seems to often sound passive, like giving up, letting life happen to you while you just shrug and say, it is what it is. But that's not what acceptance actually means. Acceptance is the opposite of passive. It's probably the most active thing you can do. So when you're resisting reality, you're spending all your energy on something that's impossible. Changing what already happened, controlling what you can't control, fighting with the universe about how you think things should be. When you accept what is, you free up all that energy to deal with what's actually in front of you right now. You're going to have terrible thoughts. You're going to feel like garbage sometimes under humiliating moments. You're probably going to be convinced that you're fundamentally broken. Acceptance means you stop fighting those thoughts like they're intruders. You stop trying to logic them away or positive think them into submission. You just notice them. And yeah, it sounds almost too simple to work, but that's because we've been taught that our problems always require some complicated solution. That healing is supposed to be really hard, and that if we're not suffering to fix our suffering, then we're doing it wrong. It's just suffering all the way down. Now, I'm not saying healing isn't hard. It's just, I think we've distorted it to make it so much harder than it needs to be in a lot of cases. And sometimes the solution really is just stopping the thing that's making it worse. You are not your thoughts. You're not your feelings or your past mistakes or your future anxieties. You are the thing that's experiencing all of that. You're the observer. The consciousness that's aware of the storm, but isn't the storm itself. You spend your whole life trying to figure out who the hell you are, building some identity, trying to become someone, but the you keeps changing all the time. And the person you were 10 years ago barely exists anymore, if at all. So the question is who are you really? Well, nobody. Everybody. A process. A verb. Trying to be a noun. A meat computer running outdated software. And that's actually the good news, because if you're not a fixed thing, you can't really be permanently broken. If there's no essential self to damage, then all your failures and your trauma and your mistakes are just things that happen to a previous version of a process that's still unfolding. You are the psychologically equivalent of a car held together with duct tape and the vague hope that today won't be the day it falls apart. You don't really need to know who you are to be okay. Okay, so you've accepted your situation. You've stopped fighting reality. You're present, aware. You're observing your thoughts. Great. Now what? You still got to go to your soul-crushing job tomorrow. And, look, the boulder's still at the bottom of the hill. So this is where acceptance becomes action. There's a concept called autotelic personality. And it describes people who do things for their own sake, not because they're expecting some future reward or outcome. It's, in a nutshell, it's basically people who find satisfaction in the process, not the outcome. Think about kids playing. They're not playing to achieve something. They're playing because playing is inherently engaging. They don't need any reason beyond, this is interesting right now. But then what happens is we grow up and we ruin everything by attaching meaning to everything and purpose. We can't just do something. It has to be goal-oriented and lead somewhere, and we have to gain something. So we turn our lives into job applications. Every experience has to demonstrate value, prove worth, and, you know, justify your existence. But let me ask you this. What if that's a bunch of horseshit and it doesn't? What if the point of pushing the boulder isn't to get it to the top, but to just push it well and just to see how efficiently you can do it? What if it's just to find the rhythm in the task and to be fully present with it? Instead of constantly thinking about reaching the top. And look, I know, it might sound like some corporate propaganda bullshit designed to make you love your exploitation. Find meaning in your meaningless job. But that's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is you're going to be pushing the boulder anyway, right? You don't have a choice about that. But you do have a choice about how you can relate or respond to the pushing. Of course, you can push while resenting every minute of it, waiting for the day you don't have to push anymore, which unfortunately never comes. Or maybe you can find something interesting in the pushing itself, and not because it's objectively meaningful, but because you're choosing to engage with it on a different level. I think the difference here is it's where you're putting your attention. All right, so I knew a guy who washed dishes at a restaurant for about 3 years. Not glamorous prep work. Just standing at a sink scrubbing other people's half-eaten meals off plates for minimum wage. Most of the kitchen staff treated it like punishment. They were bitter and resentful, counting down the hours until they could leave and get drunk enough to forget they had to come back the next day. You know, the good old American dream. But this guy turned the job into a game of sorts. How efficiently could he clear a rack? How few motions could he use? And he started looking for patterns. Stuff like which servers stacked dishes better, which cooks didn't overuse oil so the pans were easier to clean. And he became weirdly good at something nobody is supposed to be good at. And he didn't do this because he loved washing dishes, of course. He did it because he was going to be there anyway. And he realized that boredom was a choice. So over time, he saved enough to move into a better situation. The dish pit wasn't forever. But the point is that he didn't spend those 3 years in mental purgatory, suffering, waiting for his so-called real life to start. That's the thing that nobody tells you. The waiting is the purgatory. The when my real life starts mindset, that's the suffering. Your life is happening right now while you're pushing the boulder. This is it. There's no other version waiting for you after you achieve enough or fix enough or become enough or whatever. It's all right. You're either present for it or you're not. And if you want the extreme version of this, just take a look at concentration camp survivors, for example. People in situations so horrible that it makes your worst day look like an inconvenience. And yet, some of them found a way through because they realized that they still had the power to choose how to react in that situation, as brutal as it was. They realized deep down that they still had agency in spite of the horror. So they found something to commit their attention to. Arguably, these people had less freedom than anyone in history. But nonetheless, within that context, they found the only freedom that actually exists. The freedom to choose their response. I know this is much easier said than done. Your external circumstances don't ultimately determine your internal state. They influence it, of course, sometimes overwhelmingly, but they don't determine it. So you can be materially imprisoned and psychologically free. And I guess conversely, you can be materially free and psychologically imprisoned. I would say most of us are the latter. We live in houses with locks that we could open any time, but we're trapped inside our own heads. All right, here's a weird paradox. Goals are important, but not for the reason you might think. For instance, a woodworker, they're not they don't just build to get a finished table or whatever. I mean, technically, yes, but that's not really the point. The blueprint gives the saw something to argue with, and without it, you're just standing in a workshop making dust. But with it, you have direction. Something to shape. The act of building is the thing. But if you only care about the finished product, you're missing the whole craft. And, you know, once it's done, sure, you may have a nice piece of furniture, but you're kind of left with this this low-level existential vacuum. So I don't really view goals as destinations. I see them more like directions. And I think this is what people miss when they talk about living in the present moment. They think it means having no goals, no plans, just floating through life like some blissed out hippie who's had one too many ayahuasca ceremonies. But that's not really presence. That's just aimlessness, which is its own kind of suffering. I think real presence means being fully engaged with what you're doing right now while moving in a direction that you've chosen. I mean, there's a delicate balance there. And it's not because that direction promises happiness, but because having a direction makes the movement meaningful in some way. So Sisyphus needs to push the boulder somewhere, and the top of the hill is as good a destination as any. And not because reaching it matters, it's going to roll back down anyway, but because pushing towards something is more engaging than just standing around with a big boulder. And let's admit it, the man is on a hell of a fitness plan, right? I mean, if nothing else, he's got to be getting jacked. I think when you have a perfectly matched combination of challenge and skill, you lose yourself in that activity, whatever that is. You've experienced this. You know, time disappears. Self-consciousness disappears. You're just doing. Okay. So here's where this might get a little uncomfortable. Happiness isn't something that happens to you. It's something you choose to commit to. Now, before you jump all over me, I don't mean in the toxic positivity way, you know, good vibes only and other similar malarkey that dismisses real depression and grief and makes you want to throw punch motivational speakers. What I'm talking about is the decision that in spite of whatever difficulties are happening in my life, I'm going to try my best to honor the good that exists by being present for it. Now, I know this isn't easy. We're all well aware that the world is full of horror. Genuinely terrible things are happening constantly. And your own life probably has plenty of legitimate pain in it as well. All of that is true. But also true, there's beauty. There's kindness. There's moments of genuine connection. There's good food. There's good conversations, etc. You know, there's art. There's music. There's nature. I don't know. The list goes on. Even simple stuff like the way the light looks at certain times of the day. For me personally, it's about the little things. Those are the things that matter to me at this point in my life, like a damn good cup of coffee, for instance. Now, these things are not mutually exclusive. And unfortunately, when we're in a constant state of misery, we're unable to notice and honor the beauty that exists, but it is there. I mean, look, I for one have always hated that statement that happiness is a choice, because I know from personal experience, it's totally dismissive of people who are struggling with certain aspects of the human condition. But I've also learned that there are times and circumstances where I did have a choice, but out of my own stubbornness or willful ignorance or whatever, I chose to remain in the dark. And I did that often. And I think in those times, choosing to be happy in the deep sense of being okay with existence, that's an act of rebellion. It's basically saying, yes, horrific things definitely exist, even in my own life. And I'm still going to honor the good things regardless. It's not denial or avoidance. It's a choice about where to put your attention. And I think it's giving the finger to the universe while also saying thank you. Again, these things, they don't have to be mutually exclusive. And if you can hold both the horror and the beauty, the tragedy, the joy of existence, I think you maintain your humanity. I think if Sisyphus is happy, he isn't happy because he's delusional about his situation. He's happy because he's chosen to find something worthwhile in the act of pushing itself. Alan Watts would probably have said he's dancing with his boulder. All right, so strip away all the philosophy, all the theory, the intellectual frameworks, and what's left? Well, moments, snapshots, experiences that don't mean anything beyond themselves. Maybe it's your friend laughing at something stupid or the way your partner looks when they first wake up. Maybe it's that particular song that always hits you in the chest. The taste of coffee on a Sunday morning, your dog excited to see you, a stranger's kindness, whatever. None of these moments add up to some grand meaning. They don't prove anything. They just are. And somehow, it's enough. Or it can be if you let it. We actually have very little control over anything in our lives. You don't control whether the boulder stays at the top or whether the relationship works out or if you get the job or whether the project succeeds or if people like you or whether your hair stays on your head or your metabolism stays fast. You barely control your own thoughts. They just appear like a weather system in your head. But you do control where you put your attention and how you respond. Attention is everything. I mean, you can put your attention on what's missing and what's wrong and what, you know, failed, what hurt you or might hurt you in the future. You can spend your entire life mentally somewhere else, checked out, waiting for the moment when things are finally good enough to be present for. Or you can try to put your attention on what's here, even if it sucks. What's actually happening? the texture of your experience is this moment. And you know, not because it's perfect or because you've achieved anything. Not because you've earned it or deserve it or because everything is fixed, but because it's what you have. And you only get this life to experience it. So Sisyphus, pushing his boulder, fully present for the push, is free in a way that most of us never are and never will be. Because he's not waiting for the boulder to stay at the top and hoping for release. He's not mentally somewhere else. He's here, right now, doing what he's doing. And that's the only freedom that really exists. The freedom in this moment. All right, so there's the boulder at the bottom of the hill, and you're standing there looking at it. You've pushed it 1,000 times before. It's rolled back down 1,000 times, and it'll roll back down 1,000 times more. You know this, and you've accepted it. So now what? I suppose you can sit down next to the boulder and declare the whole thing meaningless. You can rage at the unfairness, wait for something to change, for the boulder to stay up, or for the hill to miraculously shrink, for someone to rescue you. Or you can just accept things and start pushing. And not because you have some grand plan or some deep meaning or because you've figured out the so-called secret to life, but because pushing is what's in front of you. Because the task is there and you're still alive and capable of doing it. And maybe if you're paying attention, you notice something interesting about the way your muscles engage or the rhythm of your breathing. Just the satisfaction of the movement, the way your mind gets quiet when you're fully absorbed in the task. Maybe you notice the temperature in the air, the way the light falls on the stone. The ache in your shoulders and your back that reminds you that you're alive. And then again, maybe you don't. Maybe it's just a bunch of pushing. But either way, you're doing it and you're showing up for your life instead of waiting or hoping for a different one. Part of this process is just radical acceptance. Because the boulder's going to roll back down and you'll walk back down and then you'll start again. And somewhere in that repetition, in that showing up again and again and again, despite knowing how it ends, there might actually be something worth calling happiness. Certainly not the giddy kind. Let's not kid ourselves here. Or the kind sponsored by pharmaceutical companies or, you know, self-help gurus. But the deep, steady kind that comes from being fully present for your own existence. I think it's the kind that doesn't require everything to be perfect or even good. It just requires you to be here right now. So the question was never really why is Sisyphus happy in this situation. I think the question is, what else would he be? I mean, miserable, sure, he very well could be, but misery doesn't change the boulder or make the gods more merciful. It doesn't make the time pass faster or the task any easier. It just makes the experience worse. So why not embrace it and be content in some way? And I don't mean in a delusional way where he's pretending his situation is something it isn't. I mean finding something worthwhile in the only thing that he has, which is this moment and the pushing of this boulder. And I don't think it's stupidity or mental endurance. I mean, it may be a refusal to give up out of sheer stubbornness, but who's to say that's not a legitimate response to an incredibly absurd situation? You don't really need meaning to be okay, or purpose to be present. You don't need everything to make sense, to find something worth paying attention to. You just need to stop demanding that life be something other than what it is. The boulder is at the bottom of the hill. Your boulders are wherever yours are. This is what you have. What are you going to do with it? I think the real work begins when you stop waiting for the work to end. All right. I think that's all I have today. As always, thanks for listening.